Dave Barry is back in print. He's got a brand new book called Dave Barry's Money Secrets, like why is there a giant eyeball on the dollar? Last time I had Dave on the show, he was in the studio with Ridley Pearson about 14, 15 months ago when they had a book together. And Dave and Ridley were both in town together and stopped by the studio. And then shortly after appearing on the show, they went off, I think, to the pageant to perform with some of their other author buddies in their band, the Rock Bottom Remainders. When are we going to get to see you guys performing at halftime of the Super Bowl, Dave?
We're not old enough yet, apparently. That was pretty pretty scary, you know? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm a fan of the Stones. I've always been a fan of the Stones. I've been a fan of the Stones for like 40-something years, but that was a little scary.
Yeah. You know what was scary to me is the first song, Start Me Up.
Right.
They hit in 1982, which means I was playing it on the radio at the time. And, of course, the third song they played, Satisfaction, you know, that's 1965.
Yeah, I was listening to that when I was in high school, which is a long time ago. So, if you told me I was going to be watching the Stones perform it on television 41 years later, I'd have thought you were smoking.
Well, here's the real question. How come after all these years, Mick still doesn't know the lyrics?
They're a little concerned about it. It's funny that a song that could be played pretty much 1 billion times on the radio was still considered too risque.
Yeah.
For TV. Yeah, at least we didn't see Mick's nipple. It was close. I think I saw his navel.
Yep. Oh, we definitely got a belly shot there.
Yeah. I'm not sure I want to see Mick. I mean, he's in good shape and everything. I just don't, you know, I don't know how much of Mick I really want to see.
No, I'm with you. It could have been worse. Could have been Keith.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I don't know that Keith still has a navel.
No.
I think among other things, he's had a skin transplant. The donor was apparently some kind of iguana or something.
Somebody who did not have track marks.
Hey, can I vote in your commercials?
Yeah.
Okay. My favorite was the Federal Express guy with the pterodactyl.
Mm-hmm.
That I like that one.
But they haven't invented FedEx yet.
That's not my problem.
That was a good one.
But the other one was the touch football game where the guy goes, "You were open and now you're closed."
Right.
There's a guy.
Yep. Absolutely.
A guy's guy.
Good stuff. Let's talk about the book. Before we get into Dave Barry's money secrets, how do I know this isn't just some memoir with everything phonied up inside?
Well, you don't. And in fact, I was stunned to discover that it's not okay to make things up. That's all I ever did.
That's your career right there.
Please don't tell Oprah about me. If he got in trouble for you know, just making up a few things.
Yeah.
I've got like decades of making stuff up.
Yeah. I got to ask you one inside business question about that. Since you've published, I don't know, 25 books, 30 books, something like that through the year. Is it possible for an agent and an editor to not know what the book is that they're either pitching or selling to the public?
You know, I don't think it is in all seriousness, this answer. I don't know that it's they don't know. I think they don't care. I was stunned when I started writing books. I came from the newspaper business. And newspapers get a lot of things wrong. Everyone knows that. But they try to get them right. I mean, you know, there is actually a mechanism in place to try to check your work and if you make a mistake, there's corrections and so on. That's just not the case in the book publishing business. The issue there is, does the book sell or doesn't it? And hardly anybody ever asks the question, is it true? Which is why you can, you know, publish books that sell very well about being abducted by aliens and you know, health books that are pretty much lunatic theories. It's not as important in the book industry.
So you're saying that in the publishing world, the attitude is facts schmacks.
Yeah, it's really it's about selling the book,
mm-hmm.
And that's really what matters. And I mean, obviously, newspapers want to sell newspapers, but there's at least part of the newspaper that's devoted to trying to make it accurate and not worrying about whether it's selling or not.
Yeah.
I don't think that exists in the book business.
And by the way, not knowing what you're talking about in a book is exactly the basis for Dave Barry's money secrets.
Yeah. No, seriously. I realize that there are a lot of money books out there. There's literally thousands of money books out there. And the question was, why did I need to write one? And the answer is, I looked at all those books, and there was one serious problem with them, which is I was not getting any of the royalties. And that's really what led to this book.
And that's really the money problem there.
Exactly.
No money going to Dave Barry.
Exactly.
Well, you've remedied that
if
now.
If you buy this book, one of us will do better. That's my feeling. we can pretty much guarantee that.
Most of us really don't know anything about money at all. Do you have any sense of what to invest in and that sort of thing?
Sure, I do. But first of all, I preach the gospel of fiscal responsibility. A lot of people, Americans, just they sort of live short term. They, you know, whatever they want today, they buy today. And they don't really think about their financial future. And I urge restraint, and I'll give you an example. Let's say every day on the way to work, you stop at Starbucks and you buy a latte for $19. let's say you pay $4, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, that doesn't seem like anything to you. $4, big deal. Doesn't affect your financial future. You think, but think of it this way. If you save that $4 every day for 2 weeks, at the end of those 2 weeks, you have enough money for half a keg of beer. That is the kind of financial planning and discipline I'm talking about.
Long-term thinking.
Long-term thinking, Paul.
This is where you're different from...
That's where I stand apart from the crowd.
Did you learn anything when you were in high school or college or anything? Because I never had a class in finances. I was 30 years old before anybody taught me anything about this sort of stuff. And that was only because my parents had been ripped off by an evil man. And so I kind of had to teach myself. Did you ever learn about that?
I learned about it when I graduated from college and discovered that my parents weren't going to support me anymore. I learned about money. My God, the whole thing of coming back home and living with your parents again, the boomeranging thing, that we weren't not allowed to do that when I graduated from college. Well, which is why one of the things I advocate is a business idea for baby boomers with kids in college who don't want their kids to boomerang on them.
Yeah.
It's based on the Federal Witness Protection Program.
Meaning?
What you'd say goodbye to your kids, their senior year. See you, kids. Wave them goodbye. Then they come back for winter break, come to their house, knock on the door, and complete stranger answers. They say, well, you know, where are my parents? There's no, you don't have parents here, kid. There's nobody here by that.
We don't know who you are. We don't know what you're talking about.
I also have some good advice in my book for how you can afford college because, as you know, college is very expensive. A good college can cost $40,000 a year, which is why I advocate the importance of planning right now to make sure your child attends a bad college. They're much, much cheaper.
Forget about that Ivy League, huh?
Exactly. You want to encourage, but that means your child needs to get bad grades.
Uh-huh.
Bad colleges require bad grades. So
you're advocating when your kid needs help with homework, you actually help them get it wrong.
Yeah, you say you will do your homework when you're done with your video games.
Priorities.
Ton of money down the road.
Yeah.
Another good money saving tip. This is a tax tip. We're coming into tax season, and when you do your federal taxes, this is a great way to save money. And a lot of people don't think of it. On your tax form, where it says name, write your name, and then write the word deceased.
Uh huh.
That's a big money saver. Not just now, but for many years to come.
Yeah. And then,
and it must be okay because you're hearing it on the radio.
But how can you do that and still get cable?
Well, the cable company doesn't have to talk to the IRS, does it? They're not the same yet.
I don't know. Somehow that all gets back around, I think.
Yeah, actually, it would explain a lot if the cable company and the IRS were the same. It would explain the customer service angle.
And how you can never get an answer that's the real answer.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm guessing that Dave Barry does not, and I'm talking about you in the third person, like we're not actually having a conversation now. I'm guessing Dave Barry does not do his own taxes.
No, you're correct. I don't. And I get every kind of delay you can get. We have a system down here. Maybe you don't know this, but in Florida, you can get delay your taxes because of the hurricanes.
Oh, really?
Yep. And we had like about 300 of them last year. So, like, we don't have to pay any taxes until, like, the year 2090.
Cool.
Because of hurricanes. We just write hurricane on our tax return and say, you might try that. They don't know. You know, maybe they hit the St. Louis area. There must have been some kind of – just write hurricane.
Yeah, the only real influence we hear from any –
write hurricane and deceased. You'll never have to. Never.
The only hurricane influence we had here was some people from Hurricane Katrina moved in for, like, a weekend and stayed with a family and then left town.
No longer they moved out?
No, that's it.
Yeah, what's going on with hurricane season? We're like, it's like runs from June through the following June now. It's like endless hurricane season.
Yeah, well, you were talking about getting extensions on everything. I have a deal. I don't do my taxes either because I'm a fairly intelligent person, but I can't figure out the forms. And
no,
I love the thing that they put on there where it tells you how long it would take you to do this form.
Oh yeah,
if you were the average person.
Well, I had a proposal once. I put in a column for how we should handle this. The tax code, which nobody in the world understands, is enacted by Congress. And they make it. All those laws were passed by Congress. They don't certainly know what they say, but they pass them. So the idea would be that every year, tax time, we take all the members of Congress, House and Senate, put them on an island with no food or water, and give them their tax forms and their records, and say, as soon as you can complete your tax form and pass an audit, with no help from anybody, you can get off the island.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I think that's a great idea.
Now, you're probably going to think, well, yeah, but a lot of them would die. They'd starve to death.
And what's the downside?
I don't know.
And then they can change that little paragraph that says it takes the average member of Congress 28 days to fill out this form.
But I have a feeling if they had to do that, the tax code would get simpler.
Yeah. I think so, absolutely. I mean, I'm so confused by it that my accountant every year says, well, we'll have to file an extension, which means you don't have to do it April 15th. You can do it August 15th.
I don't know. But then they keep coming back to you. Like, you're filling out. I'm still dealing with forms from, like, 2004.
Yeah. But. Well, what I do is every year on August 16th, we just fill out the form for the following year. Just get ahead of the game as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, try this deceased thing. It'll really save you.
Okay. All right. Stand by for just a minute, Dave. We'll come back and talk some more. The book is called Dave Barry's Money Secrets, like Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar? By the way, I'm going to be the only person you talk to about this book who does not ask you to answer that question.
Okay, good.
All right?
Let that be a little mystery.
It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Talking with Dave Barry. Got a new book out called Dave Barry's Money Secrets. On the cover, that's him doing the George Washington pose, wearing the white wig. Where do you go to get a George Washington white wig, Dave?
I went to the photo studio, and they had one there for me, and it's probably three sizes too small. Either I have a much bigger head than George Washington, or that just they took that from, like, a Ken doll or something.
Well, you know, that's not really his hair. He had wooden hair.
Oh, no, wait. I think he had a wooden... teeth. So does Mick Jagger, by the way.
In the book, you talk about how to get a job, and as with many things in the book, it involves naked photos of Angelina Jolie.
Well, that's just, you know, if you stick those into your resume, it's likely your resume is going to hang around a little longer. You know what I mean? They're going to say, "Hey, let me see that one again."
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's very important when you go through that. That job seeking process, that you'd be ready for the job interview, and particularly you want to be aware of the trap questions they'll ask you to trick you into saying something negative about yourself. And so you want to have the good answer ready and want to avoid the bad answer. Like if they say to you, your interviewer says, "What would you say is your biggest weakness?" A good answer would be, "Sometimes I get so involved in my job that I neglect my personal life."
Ooh, that is a good one.
Yeah. A bad answer would be heroin. Or if they say, how do you respond to criticism from your superiors? A good answer is, I view it as a chance to improve myself by learning from those with more wisdom.
Right.
Bad answer is, if they're so superior, how come they can't figure out who killed their dog? A very bad answer. Don't give that answer.
No, you don't want to give that answer.
You don't want to give that answer.
What do you say when they ask you, and this is asked in every interview for every job? I think that before they pick somebody to be the nominee of a party, for president of the United States, they ask, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I see myself in 2011. Where do you see yourself?
That's a perfect answer. You're a forward-thinking guy, Dave.
Yeah.
What was the last time you actually applied for a job?
Man, it's been a long, long time, and I really don't have any useful skills, so I don't think I would do very well. And, no, there's lots of reasons I don't want to apply for a job.
What jobs did you have when you were like a teenager?
I drove a furniture delivery truck briefly, and part of the problem with that is there was a bridge in New York called the Tappan Zee Bridge, which goes across the Hudson River, and we had to make a delivery on the other side of the Hudson River, and this was a van with a big top on the back, and you had to latch it down, and I failed to do that after we had unloaded this dinette set. And driving back across the Hudson River, we heard this like whoop, and there was the top of the back of the truck just sailing off like a giant frisbee.
Wow!
Over the Hudson River, yep. So I had to drive back home with half the truck.
That was
the end of that job.
I thought you were going to say the toughest part of driving the furniture truck wasn't driving it, but actually having to load and unload the furniture.
Yeah, that was hard, too, because it was heavy. You had to lift it up. But I loved that job because I liked driving the truck. But anybody listening, always remember to latch the top of the truck onto the back of the truck, or it might blow away.
Have you ever wanted to start or run your own business?
No, because then you have to, like, be responsible.
Yeah,
I always admire people who are willing to do that, be be actually responsible for a business.
Well, that's only if you want to set an example for your employees.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to be caught doing that.
Yeah, and you've kind of had your own business going here.
That's why I work for a newspaper. Why do you work for radio, right? Because you don't want to have a real job.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's be honest. Let's you know.
And like you, this is all the skills I have.
Exactly. If ever there came a horrible economic convolution, revolution, or whatever.
Yeah.
And everybody was out having to actually survive by manual skills, you and I would be passing through the digestive systems of wild dogs.
That's exactly right.
Everybody else, people with useful skills, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. What do you think of some of these gurus like this Jim Cramer on CNBC? It's the most popular show on that channel.
I think I love that show. You turn it on and you're looking at this man, stalking around his studio, spittle coming out of his mouth, screaming at people to buy and sell stocks. And I think they do. They say, well, he must know what he's talking about. He's on television.
Right.
And the thing is, I have found this to be true. And in promoting my book, which clearly is I don't know anything really about. It's a humor book. You would think that people would see that, but I'll go on these shows where they have call-ins. And after I've been raving for, 25 minutes of, giving just ridiculous advice, they'll take calls, and the people will call, and they have serious questions.
What do you think of Disney in wake of the merger with Pixar?
And I don't know what to do. I mean, I think people just believe it. Everybody must know more about money than I do. That seems to be the attitude a lot of people have about it.
But I think that in Jim Cramer's case, he doesn't know every single stock. It's not possible.
But he has an answer every time.
Yes.
Do you want to hear mine? I have a stock system. I have a great – it's better than Jim Cramer's.
Okay.
Want to hear it?
Yeah.
It's a three-step system for making money in the stock market. And if you do these three things, I guarantee you, right here on the electric radio, that you will make money in the stock market.
Okay.
You want to write this down.
I got it.
Step one, you research the market for the past 20 years, and you determine which stocks have consistently outperformed the market.
Okay. History is important. Okay.
Okay. Step two, get a time machine. Step three, go back in time and buy those stocks. If you do those three things, you will make money. No one who has ever followed that system has ever not made money in the stock market.
Yeah.
It's a guaranteed system. It's foolproof.
I like it. I like it. Now I'm just trying to figure out, can I invest in number two there?
Listen, I can't be responsible for every little thing.
What about real estate?
Real estate, it's a good thing to do. It's a good investment. If you avoid most people, their biggest investment is their home, and residential real estate. It's usually a good investment. If you avoid the two most common mistakes of home buyers,
yeah.
One would be to buy an older home, and the other would be to buy a newer home. Because the older homes are falling apart because they're old,
yes.
And the newer homes are falling apart because they're new. Every home I've ever owned was falling apart for one of those two reasons.
Well, then how am I going to become the next Donald Trump?
Well, you can read my book. I have a chapter in my book. Donald Trump wrote a book called How to Get Rich. And as part of the research for my book, I read his book. And it took me nearly an hour, which is probably 45 minutes longer than it took Donald to write that.
Uh-huh.
Because it's really more a collection of random statements than it is what you would call an actual system for getting rich. Like Donald will say, I love Regis Philbin. He's great. I got a call from Paul Anka. He's great. My wife, what a babe.
Yeah.
Golf, great sport. I have several golf courses. They're terrific.
Uh-huh.
It's like all the way through, you keep going, where's the part where he tells you how to get rich?
Yeah.
I think the way you get rich the Donald Trump way is to be born to Donald Trump's parents, who apparently were rich.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the secret.
Or to get into Trump's family some other way.
Well, yeah, or you marry him. But I'll sink pretty low, but I'm not marrying Donald Trump.
What about one of the kids?
And heaven knows he's asked me enough to. Donald, if you're listening, stop sending the pictures.
There's got to be some other, because the way I invest in real estate is based on late night infomercials.
Oh, yeah.
usually with Asian men on a boat surrounded by bikini babes.
Yeah, and you can't go wrong.
No.
You don't need any money.
No money.
And in fact, I love those. I can watch those infomercials for hours. Ted, tell me your story. Well, Bob, until I met you, I was living in a refrigerator carton. I had a loincloth. I didn't even have underwear.
Yep.
And then, but thanks to your system, I bought a house the first day for no money at all. Have you ever met anybody with?
I've tried that myself when I've gone and put an offer in on a house. I try to say, well, I'd like to give you no money.
No money. I would like you to buy. I'd like to buy your house with no money, boy. They just laugh and laugh.
They do.
You've been watching infomercials again, haven't you?
I don't think you can actually pay for the time for an infomercial.
Infomercial, guys.
Try going to a TV station. I'd like to put an infomercial on the air, but not pay any money for it.
Yeah.
No.
What I don't understand is if you know, why don't they ever let you buy their book for no money? They want money for their book.
Yes, that's right.
The system, they want money.
The book and the system and the tapes.
They're telling you can buy a house for no money, but you can't buy their tapes for no money.
No, that'll be $999.
Yeah.
It's marked down for you from $1,000 because we know you know a bargain.
Tell you what, I'll pay you for your tapes after I get rich from your system. How's that?
Yeah.
It's foolproof. You won't object to that, sir, will you?
You never hear these guys selling on a percentage basis.
No.
Look, I'll give you my system. You just give me 10% of whatever you make.
Yeah.
Not going to work, is it?
And I love their motivation. Hi, for no good reason at all, I'm going to tell everyone my system for getting rich.
Right.
Why? Because I want you to know. I want you to know how I get, you know, no.
Here's how I get rich. I sell a couple thousand of these at $999.
Well, we want to stress that we're not talking about anybody who advertises on KMOX.
No.
Those are all real systems.
Absolutely not. And you can find even better systems in Dave Barry's Money Secrets. We're taking another break and coming right back here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Talking with Dave Barry. He's back in print now with Dave Barry's Money Secrets. Like, why is there a giant eyeball on the dollar? You know, in the last segment, we mentioned Jim Cramer, the whack job from CNBC, but we didn't mention his wife, Susie Orman. They are married, aren't they? There can't be anybody in a different family that would put up with either of them.
Yeah, Susie Orman features. And she plays a major role in my book. First of all, we love Susie. She is our goddess of finance. She's on all the time. There's an FCC regulation now that Susie Orman must be on some channel 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on Nickelodeon, sometimes on the Nature Channel. Susie is there dispensing financial advice.
She's on that skating show, The Skating with Celebrities.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's a judge or one of the skaters, but she's on there too.
She's also like, I think in Lost, when they finally find out whatever it is that's sneaking around that island. It'll be Susie. Anyway,
down in the hatch somewhere.
With advice about balancing your portfolio. But anyway, I just found Susie. I mean, I think Susie's pretty funny. So I put her in the book at one point, just sort of as a picture of Susie with that kind of Susie grin.
Yeah.
That wild and crazy gal grin. And then it just became sort of a running joke all the way through my book. Whenever I wanted to get wacky fun,
mm-hmm.
I put a big old picture of Susie Orman in there.
Couldn't
get, she's a wacky fun girl.
You couldn't get the Angelina Jolie pictures? I think that would have increased sales, I'll be honest
that
with you.
That probably would have done a lot better, yeah.
Although, if people are looking for a money book, maybe not.
I don't know. Angelina probably, never mind.
Yeah, I think you're right. I forgot what I was going to talk about now that I'm starting to think about Angelina Jolie. You see what you do to me, Dave? You see what you do to me?
Yeah, that effect on many men.
Yeah. Have you, you know, when you write a book, you get all sorts of people who review it, and then, you know, especially in the world of blogging, people are writing comments. Do you see any of that stuff, and have you been surprised by any of the people who've had nice things to say about you?
Well, I haven't actually seen any blog comments on it. I did get a nice review in the New York Times. I was stunned. Janet Maslin, who is a longtime respected New York Times reviewer, who kind of generally reviews more literary books. I didn't even know she would read my book, let alone, but she said she gave a really kind of nice review. So
that's nice.
Yeah, but I have learned over the years, having written many books, you really don't want to be reading your reviews.
No.
I read that one because somebody said, my editor said, this is a great review, you got to read it. But the thing is, you get it really up about the good ones, but then you get really down about the bad ones, and there always will be bad reviews.
Oh, yeah.
And I once asked Stephen King, who has, he doesn't have anything to worry about, let's put it that way.
Right.
And he sold millions and millions of books. And I had gotten a bad review on this a couple of years ago, and they said, So does it bother you when you get a review, a bad review? He says, it eats at my soul.
Really?
Yes. So, like, I've discovered there are quite a few people, book writers like myself, you just sort of, there's two ways. Some people, they read them, and if they're bad, they get real angry, and they, you know, they send them letters, and they fight back. And there's some people like me, you just rather not know. And when it gets to the level of comments in the internet, then it's really better not to, because anybody can, you know, you don't really know who the people are usually commenting, and people can say, they can say great things, but they can say unbelievably vicious things. And it, since, you know, why should you let yourself get depressed about a comment from someone you don't even know?
How ironic that of all the scary, creepy things that Stephen King right. has written about,
exactly.
the one thing that drives a stake through his heart is a bad review.
Well, he's also really afraid of playing the wrong chord. when we play in our band, Stephen gets really worried about, you know, which chord we're supposed to play next.
Uh-huh.
Now, the rest of us don't worry about it.
The band he's talking about is the Rock Bottom Remainders, which is Dave Barry and Stephen King and Amy Tan and our friend Ridley Pearson from right here in town. In fact, last time Dave was in town playing with the Rock Bottom Remainders, he and Ridley came in because at the time they had their book out, which was called Peter and the Star Catchers, an absolutely wonderful book. My daughter, I mean, she raved about this book for every day she was reading it and days after that as well. And told her friends to get copies, too. So maybe we sold a couple of copies here and there for you. It was a prequel to Peter Pan, which I guess did fairly well because you're working on another one, right?
Yeah, it did real well, and Disney published it. And we had so much fun writing it, and we sort of just got into this world of how Peter Pan came to be that we almost immediately after we finished that one started outlining the next one, and we just finished it. It's coming out in July. It'll be called Peter and the Shadow Thieves, and it's a sequel to the prequel
mm-hmm.
to Peter Pan. But
now, do you really reach like a point where it's like taking a half of a half of a half of a
yeah.
half,
yeah.
and you have to figure out how do we fit one more in between that and when he meets Wendy?
Yeah, I think we kind of, first of all, I didn't realize it would be this complicated. I thought we'd do one book and it would be there, you know. But we just got so deep into it, the story got so kind of involved that. It ended up being now two books, and I think it's going to be three before we're done, before we get to the beginning of Peter Pan.
But mm-hmm.
It's been really a fun ride.
And then you get back in your time machine and you do the prequel to the prequel.
like Star Wars.
Yeah.
I never got Star Wars straight. I mean, I think the first one was episode 6. Did I get that right? Does anybody
four.
Know?
I think 4.
Okay. And then it ended with episode 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
That's Hollywood accounting for you. That is what we did. But we didn't start with 4.
Speaking of Hollywood, any movie plans for Peter and the Star Catchers?
Yeah, Disney Animation optioned, there's a long way between optioning a book and the actual movie being made. But if all goes well, there will be a Disney Animation movie of that.
Now let's see if we can bring this all back together again with Dave Barry's Money Secrets. Does optioning mean you get a check?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what it means.
That's nice.
The good thing.
Yeah. And are you still...
I advise everybody out there, if you ever get option, you know, just take it. Although, if it's like pork bellies, which is another kind of option, if you buy a pork belly option, make sure, this is the most important thing, write down when it comes due and sell it before then, or you're going to wake up someday with, you know, a UPS guy with 50,000 frozen dead pigs. Deliver to your house. Ever want to be the last person with an option. That's my financial advice.
You're saying
optioneers out there.
The dead pigs would be a bad thing.
Yeah, that's because when they're talking pork bellies, that's what they really mean is dead pigs. Be advised.
I didn't know what pork bellies were, so now I've learned something from you here.
They're the bellies of porks. Pork is just an economic term meaning pigs.
are you going off to the Olympics with your wife?
No, I wish I were. She's a sports writer for the Miami Herald, Michelle Kaufman, and she is leaving tomorrow for Torino to cover the Olympics, as she's done for the last 9 Olympics.
Wow.
I'm staying home with Sophie, who's our daughter, to take her to kindergarten and make her lunches and try to get her ponytail in the back of her head. She complains sometimes when Daddy does the ponytail because it sticks out the side. Kind of asymmetrical look. You know?
I'm laughing hysterically at this because I had it happen last night with my daughter. She's not 5. She's 11 and a half.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
I said, you know, you got to put up this in a ponytail. It's just such a mess. We don't have time for you to brush it because that takes a half hour. Let me help you. And I do it, and she's looking in the mirror as the parts are falling down the side, and she's giving me that, Dad, you don't know anything.
I don't know what it is. excuse me, I cannot do a good ponytail. And I pay. I mean, she gives me this look.
Yeah.
Like, you mark. You think I'm going out? She's only five. But, you know, like, you think I'm going out looking like this?
Yeah.
So I usually have to go three or four times. And by that point, I pulled out half the hairs on her head. But usually we finally get it so she accepts it.
The book is called Dave Barry's Money Secrets, like Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar? And as promised, I'm the only person who's talking to Dave about this book who does not ask him about the eyeball on the dollar.
I'm so proud of you. So proud of you, Paul.
Thank you. I'll see you this summer, hopefully, when the...
Yeah, we'll come through. When I come, we'll come to St. I'm sure we'll come to St. Louis because that's where Ridley lives.
I would love to have that happen. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for having me in.
My pleasure. Dave Barry's Money Secrets. You'll also find him online at davebarry.com and occasionally here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.